In the beginning of the first Aliyah of Parshas Tezria, Rashi tells us that this Parsha will detail the rules of Tumah regarding people following Parsha Shmini, which told us about the laws regarding animals, and that this follows the same ordering that we find in creation, where animals were created first, and then people were created afterwards. It's noteworthy that the Gemara has two different perspectives as to the significance of this order. One perspective is that this reflects positively on humanity, that the whole world was created first and people came last, as if to show that the table was being set for the purposes of serving people, and people then entered into a room that was fully prepared for them. And the other perspective seems to go in the opposite direction, that if humanity should ever become haughty, they are reminded that even the mosquito was created before them. And these seem to go in two different directions, and the Rashiv of Kambiyad, the Rav Goldwich, noted that it all depends on the thought process here, that if one recognizes that they're created for a purpose, then everything comes together and serves that purpose, and therefore being created last is a symbol of importance, and humanity is therefore the most important part of the process. But if there is no ultimate purpose, everything is discrete and separate from each other, and therefore being created last is the least important status. Accordingly, it's crucial for humanity to recall, to remember that they are created for a purpose, to serve God, and in doing so, therefore, they maintain their status as the most important creation, and having been created last, therefore, reflects importance rather than the opposite, and that's an important message going into this parsha as well. And keeping with that point, Rav Leo Schlesinger in his Sefer Eilah HaDvarim notes that this week's parsha is about the consequences of speech, and it's in order to emphasize that the added element that humanity has over animals is the power of speech, and it's a reminder, therefore, to protect that advantage, to make sure to speak like a human and not like an animal, to make sure that the speech is sanctified and holy and of a permitted nature, and not to engage in the kinds of lashon hara and prohibited speech that brings about the afflictions that are described in these parshios. Pasuk Beis here talks about childbirth and tells us that it's followed by a period of tuma, of impurity for the mother, and the Netziv comments that this is because we find that the period of nidus that normally takes place for a wife is, as according to the explanation of Reb Meir in the Gemara in Nida on Daf Lamed Aleph, in order to create a period of separation in order to endear her to her husband. And since during the time of pregnancy, there is no such time of separation, therefore immediately following the pregnancy, the Torah is imposing this time of separation in order to restore that idea and to again endear her to her husband. Pasuk Gimel tells us of Yom HaShmini Yimol Basar Laso, the obligation of Ris Mila specifically on the eighth day, which the Gemara in Shabbos on Daf Kuf Lamed Beis Man Aleph tells us takes place even on Shabbos, and the Gemara a little bit later on Daf Kuf Lamed Hei Man Aleph tells us that this is specifically linked to Tumah, so therefore only a birth that leads to such tumah would have this rule of overriding Shabbos, for example, to exclude a C-section. And there is a debate between the author of the Shulchan Aruch, the Mechaber, and the Ramah regarding the nature of this overriding on Shabbos. Is it what we call dechuya, meaning that it's only going to override Shabbos when it's absolutely necessary, or do we say that it's hutra and it's a complete permission to give a bris milah on Shabbos without any restrictions? And the practical ramification is that they used to have a practice that they would divide up the two parts of the bris milah, which known as the Mila and the Priya, between two molim in order to honor and involve two people in the process. But the Mechaber maintained in Yerideya in Reish Samach Vav Sif Yudalid that that should not take place on Shabbos, because since we are only allowing Shabbos to be dechuya, to be pushed away for the purpose of the bris milah, so we shouldn't involve more people than necessary. And the Rama disagreed. The Rama maintained that it's simply completely permitted to have a bris milah on Shabbos, and therefore there's no reason not to involve 12 extra people. And this was a debate that continued among others as well. The Amshul Shlomo in Sefer Anivamos took the opinion that if the first mole doesn't complete the process, then he would actually be Chayiv Kares. And the Rabbi Behuda in his Shuvas in Tinyana Arachayim Simin Chaf Beis disagreed. He said that he was personally machmir not only to do part of a bris milah on Shabbos, but in theory he disagreed and thought that it is still permissible to have two involved. And he explained that even though the Gemara says that mal v'lo para ki'ilu lo mal, that if the second part of the process isn't done, it's as if there's no mitzvah at all, that's only if the second part isn't done at all. But if the second part is done, then retroactively the first part is considered to be a mitzvah. And the Mahershag, in his Shuvas, also notes that the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, Daf Chav Beis and Aleph, notes regarding Kiddush HaChodesh and the times that that was permitted to be performed on Shabbos and to involve overriding the Shabbos, that that was extended even to those who were only helping out in the process, and that seems to be the case here as well. In Pasuk Vav, we read about the korban that's part of the purification process for the Aledes. The Pasuk tells us, Uvmulos Yimei Tahara, Levein Olavas, Tavi Keves Ben Shnasoli Ola, Uven Yona, Osor Lachatos, El Pesach Ohamoed, El HaKohen. That the mother is to bring a korban involving a lamb and also a bird that is either a ben yonah, a pigeon, or a tor, a turtle dove. The Balaturim notes here that usually in these contexts the Torah mentions Torim first and only Yonah afterwards, and here the Yonah is mentioned first, and he explains that that's because in this case the Yonah is actually the preference, and that's because only one bird is taken, and in that situation it's preferable to take a Yonah rather than a Tor, because the nature of the Tor is that if it is separated from its mate, it will not find another mate and will mourn its original mate for the rest of its life, in contrast with a Yonah. So the Torah doesn't want us to deprive the Torah of its mate if it's possible to take a Yonah instead. Rav Simcha Zissel Broyd of Chevron in the Sefer Sam Derech notes that you see here the tremendous sensitivity that the Torah is trying to convey to Tzar Bali Chaim, that when we choose an animal for a korban, better that we should minimize the suffering that the animal has to go through, even on an emotional level. And if we don't have to deprive an animal of its mate, better that we choose the other option rather than impose any degree of extra suffering that is avoidable. And this is an additional lesson that this korban instills upon us, even in studying it. The Saliyah also begins to teach us about the process of examining nigayim, the bodily afflictions. In Pasuk Beis here in Parak Yud Gimel, we read about the Kohanim and their role. And Rashi tells us that this purification process can only happen specifically through a Kohen. The Gemara in Maseches Erchin and Daf Gimel Amud Aleph tells us that this extends even to a Kohen who is not a Baki, who is not an expert in the Halachos. However, as Rashi explains over there, that means he would have to go to a Talmid Chacham who is indeed expert, who would teach him what to do, and then he would be able to rule accordingly in conjunction with his instructions.